Hi everyone, Davinia here, and this season of Let's Make It Rain, the podcast, is sponsored by PensionBee, an online pension provider who's on a mission to make pensions simple so that customers all over the UK can become pension confident and save for a happy retirement. PensionBee's website and app make it simple for customers to combine their old pension pots, contribute flexibly, and withdraw their pension money all in one place. PensionBee offers a range of pension plans for a range of different needs, whether you're self-employed or want to invest responsibly with a fossil fuel-free or impact investing plan. Head to pensionbee.com or download the app to get started and become pension confident. Remember, as with all investing, your capital is at risk. And speaking of investing, for lots of us, we didn't start learning about how to save, spend, and invest our money for the future until we were well into our adulthood. I wrote Cash is Queen to change that. Cash is Queen is the world's first financial literacy book written exclusively for preteen and teenage girls, equipping them with everything they need to build solid financial foundations long before they start their first jobs. Buy it for your daughters, your nieces, your granddaughters, your goddaughters, and even yourselves. Link in show notes to find out more. Enjoy the episode. Hi, and welcome to the Let's Make It Rain podcast. I'm your host, Davinia Tomlinson. This podcast is for the rainmakers. Those women who are breaking down walls, building their own empires, defying convention and rejecting stereotypes. Women who are unafraid to have open, honest conversations about money among friends and to share the truths we've been told to keep secret. Don't forget to subscribe, share and download wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, then please leave us a 5-star review. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Let's Make It Rain podcast. Today I'm pleased to be joined by Claire Reindorp. Claire is CEO of Young Women's Trust, a leading UK organisation championing income equality for young women aged 18 to 30. Claire, thank you so much for being here today. Can you introduce yourself for the benefit of the listeners?
Hi Davinia, it's lovely to be here. I'm Claire Reindorp. As you say, I'm Chief Exec of Young Women's Trust. And we, as you say, we're championing young women aged 18 to 30. We're trying to bring about a more equal world of work and raise young women's incomes.
Brilliant. Okay, so let's get right into it, because you or Young Women's Trust have just released a brilliant, albeit sobering and deeply concerning report with regard to the widening financial inequality faced by young women. And of course, we're in the midst of a cost of living crisis, which we know affects most of us, but we know not equally. Can you share some of the insights from this research and maybe explain the practical impact on young women?
Sure. Well, it's pretty depressing. But the headline finding really is that lots of people are impacted by the cost of living crisis right now. We know that. But the evidence that we've got is that it's really hitting young women particularly hard. And compared to when we did this survey last year, the picture is bleaker. And the gulf between the financial experiences of young men and young women is widening. And we know that's partly because there's an income gap of 1/5 between young men and young women. Young women are taking home 1/5 less income per year. And that's a kind of root cause here. How's that showing up right now? Well, firstly, it's showing up that young women are saying that their finances are getting worse, like 50% of young women saying their finances are getting worse right now compared to last year. And that compares to 31% of young men, so kind of a big gap. We know that 62% of young women are struggling to make their cash last till the end of the month compared to 48% of young men. And 1/3 of young women have been unable to afford food or essential supplies. That's 1/3. And that compares to 1/5 of young men. So on every measure, the position of young women is worse than their male peers. And while the figures for men have sort of stabilised this year compared to last year, the figures for young women have got worse. And it does make us really worried about the day-to-day choices that young women are having to make, but also the implications on their future.
I mean, the idea that, you know, our finances as young women have worsened whilst for young men it's stabilised is, of course, deeply concerning. But it also, you know, leads us down this kind of path of curiosity as to why, you know, why is there such a big gap between young men and young women? And I suppose, you know, you've talked about some of the statistics. In real terms, what does that look like in terms of how much less on an annual basis are young women earning, or do they have access to in terms of what's in their bank balance versus their young male counterparts?
Well, earlier this year, we worked with economists analysing government data to look at the salaries of young men and young women. And we found that gap in income of 1/5 less for young women per year than young men equates to about £5,000. It's a huge amount.
Wow.
We know that's like the average, you know, household spend on food and bills for the year. Over the course of 4 or 5 years, you could start saving for a home. You know, these are the sorts of... That's a sort of massive figure, isn't it, that makes a huge difference day to day. And when you think about how it could affect your choices moving forward. And we know that that income gap gets bigger and bigger as women get older. That's how you have a pensions gap of 35-40% or more. Because young women are not saving, are they? You know, they're surviving.
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking, I mean, £5,000, just to go even more granular, you're talking just over £400 a month less. I mean, imagine for anybody listening, if you imagine a hole in your income of £400 a month, you know, and you think about in real terms, for those people listening that are parents, or if you are commuting to work, if you run a car, you know, if you think about your rent or your mortgage, what a massive hole that leaves in your day-to-day finances. And of course, as Claire said, you know, some of the choices that you are suddenly precluded from making as a result, or the trade-offs that you're having to make. But Claire, before we get to that question, why do you think that such a big gap exists in the first place? You know, where does it come from?
Well, again, the analysis that we've done suggests there's three main reasons behind it. One is about the types of work that young women are doing. They're still, even now in 2023, getting funneled into particular sectors which are low paid, like care, like retail, like hospitality. We also know that a big part of that annual income gap is young women not being able to work as many hours as they would like. And that's typically due to things like a lack of affordable and flexible childcare, a lack of flexible working options. We know young women are doing much more unpaid care, their younger siblings, older relatives for their own children. And thirdly, we know that young women are really still facing huge amounts of sexism in the workplace. And we talk about at Young Women's Trust, the broken rung at the bottom of the career ladder that is stopping young women to progress, stopping them kind of, you know, moving up in their organisations and getting their promotions that they deserve. Because we know, you know, the glass ceiling is a common expression. People know that that is a shorthand for talking about how do you get women into leadership positions and how do you get women in the boardroom. But it's equally important to look at what is happening at the beginning of young women's careers, where the inequality is starting to set in, and how you get talent pipelines of young women started is by looking at what happens in their 20s, right from the beginning.
Gosh, there's so much to unpack just in that short response, Claire. I mean, let's start with broken rung, because of course in the work that we do at Raincheck in, you know, helping to tackle some of the many financial inequalities that women face and to kind of give us back control, you know, help us to take control of our finances by upskilling ourselves and closing, you know, any gaps that we might have in terms of our financial education. And of course, that work has led me, you know, particularly having written Cash is Queen specifically for younger women, preteen and teenage girls, in recognition of the fact that, you know, financial literacy is such an important gateway to your economic independence as an adult. And that, more importantly, the importance of, I guess, starting that journey of financial discovery early and before young people are reaching adulthood, and then being confronted by, you know, so many other things to contend with as adults, and recognizing that, you know, if your finances are not in order, then suddenly life gets much harder than it would otherwise be. So I'm particularly interested in what you say about the broken rung, because exactly as you describe, we are all so familiar with the glass ceiling, but I've never heard the broken rung before. So can you give us a definition for anyone listening?
I think it's a phrase that kind of it sort of just explains the challenge that young women are facing right at the beginning of their careers when they are trying to get that first step from moving from entry level, perhaps getting your first management job, going from like one level to another, becoming a more senior, getting a promotion, getting a pay rise, getting some more responsibility. We found when you analyze the data that there is a correlation between how long young men stay in a job and their growth in their salary. But that link between the salary and how long you stay in a job for young women is much weaker. And there's really good statistical evidence about that broken rung, because young women are just not being promoted at the same rate. And there's other ways around looking at that sort of that phenomenon. And one of those is to ask HR professionals, when we surveyed them, what do you think is going on in your organization? We spoke to 900, and they were very open in that anonymous survey where they could say what was really happening. There were very large numbers who were admitting that they knew that young women in their organization were not being supported to progress, that they were not being paid the same, even for equal work. And there was some of this sort of misogyny and sexism that was alive and well in their organisations. For example, 1 in 10 HR professionals thought that men were more suitable for management positions than women. And those are the sort of sexist attitudes that is breaking that rung of the ladder and making, you know, there are some managers in workplaces out there who really don't think that that next level of responsibility should be given to women. Yeah, it's hard to believe, isn't it, in 2023, but it's it's very much there. And this is where it all starts, as we're saying. You've got to kind of get the camera in looking at what's happening in early 20s, because young women are graduating in higher numbers than young men. They're doing better in education. They're doing better in every single stage of education, from SATs to degrees. And those who are getting degrees, because of, you know, there's more stories that we're hearing about young women dropping out of university because of the worries about what they can afford, you know, whether they can afford their education. But many women are getting into huge level of debt in their degrees, hoping that they're going to get a better paid job at the end of it to pay off that debt. But the evidence still is there that men with degrees get a premium for their degree that women don't.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an important conversation we're having, Claire, because I think almost as a rebuttal to anybody that would suggest that, you know, oh, you know, gender diversity has gone too far, or, you know, what about the boys that are falling behind in their education? You know, girls are doing much better than boys in terms of their education. But of course, what the data and the statistics, it's not based on your opinion or my opinion. What the data quite clearly reveals is that despite us outperforming and outpacing boys and men in terms of our educational outcomes, when it comes to the workplace, it is not converting into cash. And ultimately, whilst money is not everything, and we're not here to debate whether or not money buys happiness, money buys choices and money buys freedom and economic independence. And the reality for lots of young women is that they are falling behind and never getting an opportunity to catch up, as perfectly illustrated by this idea of the broken rung. You know, you put your foot on the first rung of the ladder and you don't get anywhere beyond that. So it's really, really important that we have this conversation and continue to raise awareness of these issues, because whilst it's excruciating, we have to keep on almost holding up the mirror to the reality that many of us are facing in society in order to force through some of the changes that are required to close these gaps. But I suppose before we get to some of your ideas and thoughts on the solutions and some of the brilliant work that Young Women's Trust is doing to help, what are some of the trade-offs in practical terms that young women are having to make as a result of this crisis? So, I don't know, having to decide between food and heating, you know, what does that mean? What does that £5,000 a year difference mean for them in real terms?
It's like absolutely massive, isn't it? We've got 27% of young women today in a rich country like the UK in global terms saying that they're having to choose between heating and eating. They're also 30% of young women are in jobs that they don't want to be in. 21% are taking jobs that they never wanted in the first place. Often that's when they're getting into cleaning, caring. I'm not saying they're not jobs that women shouldn't want to do, but we know they're low paid and we know they're low status because they're done by women. They're having to choose which of their debts to pay off. Women are going into debt at much higher rates than young men. 31% of young women have said they've been forced into debt compared to 23% of young men. So there's an issue around you know, just that sort of day-to-day survival. There's also, you know, really depressing stories about women being trapped in abusive relationships. You rightly say that one of the real important things about money is it gives you choice. And that lack of choice for young women can actually be really dangerous for them in situations where they're in abusive relationships, unhealthy relationships they don't want to be in. And the other thing that we just mentioned is making decisions to drop out of education or can't afford to get retrained, you know, because they can't take any risks. They've got to kind of stick where they are, stay in their lane and just trying to survive rather than really make those more creative decisions about what they actually want. And one of the things that we are really aiming to do as an organisation with young women is to give them that sort of fairer financial future. And that starts with the choices right now, isn't it? Young women want to feel they can make choices. They want to feel what they do is of value, whatever they choose to do, whether that is to be a carer, whether that is to go into tech. All those choices are equally valued and there is real options for them. This is the really worrying thing about what's happening right now is it's entrenching inequality. Even these last 12 months, we can see it's widening the gap between young men and young women. And where is this actually going to take us in the next few years? Because we know that the cost of living crisis is not going to go away anytime in the short term. This is the picture for next year or more. And it is a really difficult time to be young.
You know, as you were speaking, Claire, my mind kind of drifted to an article that I read recently about, it was something to do with gender equality. And occasionally when I'm brave or when I'm looking for lols, I'll go into the comment section of some of these articles. And of course, you've got this kind of screaming, red-faced commentators who are talking about how, you know, this younger generation, they always talk about millennials. And, you know, I'm considered at the top end of millennials, but they talk about millennials. And I think they probably mean younger than millennials, actually. And they talk about, you know, oh, in my day, we didn't have choice. You know, we just had to do these jobs. And actually, the younger generation needs to just suck it up and stop complaining, because you don't always have to enjoy your work. You just have to do it and get paid and recognize that it's a privilege to work, for example. Or they're talking about, well, you know, getting on the property ladder, that's a privilege as well. Why should we treat it as a rite of passage? This generation is the most entitled, most privileged generation on record. And there is just no awareness, there is no empathy, and there's no understanding of the real reality that people are facing and also the disparity between groups. And so, in your response, you know, you've issued almost a perfect rebuttal to some of those comments, because ultimately it's about choice and it's about giving young women an equal opportunity and equal access to some of the choices that their young male counterparts might have. Not, of course, excusing the fact that, you know, actually, as a young person, there might be some really crap jobs that you have to do. Maybe you don't want to do, and maybe you find yourself in a job that you're like, well, I wouldn't choose it, but it's enabling me to travel or to do some of the other things that I would want to do. So this is not a debate about that. This is a debate about actually all of their choices have been taken away from them and they're being thrust into employment they wouldn't otherwise have had to take if things were more equal.
100%. And I just think there isn't enough political attention on young women and young people and about what it's like to be young today. I mean, I had free school meals. I had a free education. I could buy a tiny little flat for £60,000, which was three times my salary as a frontline worker in the charity sector. I could get on the property ladder at 30. I graduated. I worked while I was studying, but I graduated without debt. These are things that are just impossible for the generation of today. And I think when you've got misogyny, sexism, racism, those things that are on top of that sense of young people being a bit forgotten about. You know, I think we have a triple lock on pensions and understanding that it's not all right. Yes. Pensioner poverty is not all right. But we have, and this makes me very cross, like staggered rates of national living wage, so that if you're under 23, you are not entitled to the same hourly wage as someone who's 23, 24. And it's not cheaper to live when you're 20, 21, 22, you know, your living costs,
why
you
would
know,
it be?
Your bills don't get less. It's partly, you know, it is a nonsense. And partly it's kind of, you know, either middle class politicians assuming that people can stay living with their parents, which assumes that they're, you know, middle class and they've got a nice home that young people can stay in until they can launch themselves in the world. But What happens for young people who can't stay with their parents, who parents are overcrowded, they haven't got relationships with their family that mean they can stay? That is not the reality for so many young people and young women. And so that income gap, like you say, is forcing impossible choices on young women that are really very different from what happened in previous generations. Much harder picture, I think, to be young today. I say that as an old woman.
No, a young woman. But a young woman with experience, Claire. But you talked about, and of course we can debate this all day, but you talked about even thinking about some of the options that people from certain socioeconomic backgrounds come from versus others in perhaps less financially abundant socioeconomic groups, even when it comes to, housing and the ability to stay at home. Once you become an adult and somebody that's able to get a job and then maybe move out to make way for younger siblings because you're in overcrowded situations, or the impact of lack of economic agency in terms of your relationship choices and perhaps dependency on a partner who might be abusive. I interviewed the brilliant founder of Surviving Economic Abuse, and their research reveals that 1 in 6 UK women will have suffered economic abuse at one point or another over the course of their relationship history. And I think, again, that lack of financial security just compounds things like that. And it leads to a poor relationship with money. Debt is one of the things that we see, particularly among young women. Of course, we know that young people as a whole will be affected. But young women, when we see that they are being targeted aggressively by fast fashion companies, for example, we've seen the proliferation of buy now, pay later type services that are, again, ramming this home. And it's almost, this kind of double-edged sword of, very disposable mass consumerist culture that we live within, which was exacerbated during lockdown because we had nothing else to do except scroll on our phones on social media. And, now we've got this new TikTok trend that we've talked about quite a lot at Raincheck, and we will be doing much more in talking about it. This girl math, hashtag girl math, which again seeks to almost amplify and promote some of the, toxic spending behaviours that, again, big companies, big retailers love, because what it means is that they trap young women in particular in a cycle of endless spending and justifying those poor choices through hashtag girl math. So for example, one example of it might be, well, buying things on buy now, pay later doesn't count because it's free money, because you haven't had to spend it today. Or if you spend anything less than £10 on something, it doesn't count because it immediately goes to zero. One advert I saw yesterday from a particularly prolific fast fashion brand, and there was a very quirky reel that they post, they're very good at the marketing. And it basically was someone saying, well, since I didn't spend anything today, I can spend double tomorrow. Because, of course, this fast fashion retailer has got a promotion. And so that promotion, in conjunction with the ability to buy now, pay later, creates this perfect storm in which young people who perhaps feel out of control in other aspects of their lives and so want to present a very glossy image and demeanor to plug those gaps maybe in their confidence levels are quite easily succumbing to some of these promotions. And so finding themselves trapped by debt very early on and then never being able to come out of it. What does your research say with regard to debt in particular? Is there anything that points to some of the gaps in terms of debt burden or the propensity to take out debt in the first place?
Well, we've definitely, and both the survey did with this year and last year, have found that young women are experiencing debt at much higher rates than young men, which is what you would expect given their lower levels of income. And as you say, things that are being marketed at them. And there's also another element here of the pink tax and products being marketed at women where they are.
Let's talk about the pink tax.
Yeah, well, there's some really interesting findings about an essential that is marketed at women having a premium put on it compared to when that same product is marketed at men. And I think in the pandemic, there's evidence that was particularly ramped up. And we know, there's period poverty. For me, that's another iceberg of the poverty more generally that young women experience, and not being able to afford the absolute essentials. But debt is a huge issue. And it's like you say, going back around to the issue of choice, about what that is going to mean for the future, and that constant pressure about which of my debts do I pay off, particularly young people, all young people struggling in a housing crisis, to pay their rents. as well as all those other, the day-to-days, the food, the other bills. And we know that there's one of the really depressing findings that 58% of young women said that they were in a state of dread when they thought about their finances. And it just gives you a sense that that word dread, about what that's actually meaning for women's mental health, their, you know, emotional state, that kind of constant anxiety about money. In the face of, like you say, relentless marketing about what you're supposed to be buying, or what a good life looks like.
Right, exactly. And of course, that is something that we know impacts not just young women, there are women at all phases of their lives that, you know, are again feeling entrapped by social media in particular, you know, and ubiquitous it all is, that you never really feel that you can escape anything. Everything seems to point back to one of the platforms, if not Instagram, then TikTok. And you know, it's where so many of the trends are coming from, even, you know, for things as seemingly innocuous as like interior design. It's not just fashion, but it's this presenting this lifestyle that we all should seemingly be leading. The guest that I had on in last week's podcast discussion was talking about, particularly when it comes to women and in her profession as a chartered psychologist, some of the clients that she sees, some of the female clients that she sees, and the pressures that they put on themselves to present in a certain way, to be operating at the highest levels in terms of their career, to be the perfect mom, the perfect friend, the perfect daughter, to have their lives all together, to have the perfect blow dry, be perfectly made up, be perfectly manicured, all of the things, all of the time. And, you know, her response to that was, you know, we have to, in one aspect of our lives or another, be willing to choose mediocrity. But I think even when we talk about this situation, when we're talking about young women who are feeling a sense of dread about their finances, they're not even in a position to consider what choosing mediocrity might look like, because from their perspective, perhaps all aspects of their lives are looking far less glossy than they would like them to look. So I can't imagine what that must be like mentally, to carry that load around every single day.
Well, absolutely. And you think about the ingenuity that it takes, the entrepreneurial skills that it takes to get by on tiny incomes. You think if that energy and talent was being channeled into something creative, you imagine what all these young women would be able to be doing. You know, this is the really terrible cost of this. And I think the thing about the income gap, and when I'm talking to different audiences about it, you know, there'll be some people who will be genuinely moved and motivated by its impact on young women, which we've been talking about. But there's also another motivation, which is not so much altruism for young women, but it's also what this is doing to our economy. Because we have an economy that's flatlining. You know, that we need a kickstart to our economy, and we've got a tight labour market, we've got a skills shortage. So where are all the skilled women? Well, the answer is they're clinging onto the bottom of that ladder. They're doing lots of unpaid work. They're mired in debt. They're using all their skills on surviving rather than channeling them into the economy. And there was a very brilliant report earlier in the year that calculated the number of women. 1.7 million women want to work more hours than they can right now because of a lack of childcare. And if they were all working the hours they wanted, it would contribute £28 billion to the UK economy. So we're not talking about a nice to have, this thing about equity. We're talking about what we're missing out on in the UK economy. And I might add, when I talk to men, what it's doing to men, the pressure on breadwinning on men, is also terrible for them. They're not spending time with their kids. They're sometimes stuck in jobs that they don't want to be in because they feel like they've got to bring in money, because if they're with a female partner, because, you know, they're much more likely to be earning less. So there's a potential freedom for men in this, I think, too. It's a gender for equality. It's always about, I think, feminism is about what's better for men and women. And this is a really good example of that. It's going to free everyone up to be more creative, to earn the money they need, to contribute to the economy, for choices for everyone.
Mm, I love that. I feel like we could almost end the podcast there, couldn't we? It's just brilliant. Yeah. I mean, because I think, you know, unfortunately for the powers that be, the policymakers, the decision makers, and those that operate at the highest echelons of, you know, UK society and government, often they're only really interested in the impact to the economy. And so I think putting it in those real terms, in terms of what is the economic contribution or loss as a result of this raging inequality, that's one of the ways to really help them or force them to sit up and take notice. But you talked about, you know, and over the course of this discussion, you know, we've talked about the work that Young Women's Trust does and the age group that you were targeting. Of course, it's 18 to 30 year olds. But within that broad group, from an age perspective, who are the most vulnerable? So which segments of society when it comes to young women are most impacted by this financial inequality?
Well, I don't think anyone will be surprised by the findings about the groups that are most affected. You know, there's when you take an intersectional lens to this research, young black women, we know, who were struggling with both sexism and racism, were particularly affected and having a double whammy to their impact on their income. We know that young women on benefits, the figures for them were appalling too. And then we know that universal credit is just simply not kept up with inflation in the last 10 years and is not providing enough for people to survive. And we're part of a coalition of many other charities calling for what's called an essentials guarantee, which is for government to increase universal credit to cover the cost of life's essentials so that no one in the UK today is actually going hungry. So young women on benefits are one group we're particularly concerned about. And the other group that really came out as struggling above everyone else really was young mums. 70% of young mums were struggling to make their cash last to the end of the month. And I think that is obviously some of the most expensive childcare system that we have in the Western world. And childcare finally is on the political agenda. There's much more awareness of that thanks to some brilliant campaigning work in the charity sector. And I hope that next year, and we go up to a general election, that affordable and flexible childcare will be on all politicians' lips, because it will be a vote winner. And it will make a huge difference. But like you say, bringing an angle of class, race, gender, disability, care and responsibilities together is really critical, because that's when you see the true picture for particular groups of young women who are getting left behind. You know, in Young Women's Trust, we are really championing the young women who are on low pay, and no pay is our top priority. All groups that are really, you know, you're talking about this life, this stage of life, this 18 to 30 is such a critical decade. And we often see quite a lot of young women in their mid-20s who are hitting that broken rung. You know, they've got into a job, perhaps they might have done a degree, they might not have carried on their studies, they've got into employment, and then they got into the middle of this first decade of their working life, and they're like, well, what is going on here? And because one of the things that we do as Young Women's Trust is provide practical support to young women, and we offer free professional coaching. I've got to give a bit of a plug here to any young women listening. We you know, do get in touch with us if you would like some support with your career, with getting into workplace, maybe because you're a bit stuck in thinking about what you want right now. Whatever your goals are, we have a fantastic team of professional coaches who can give you some free support and help you think about what it is you want for yourself, whether that's a money-related goal, as I say, or work-related goal. When we hear from young women, you know, the difference that it's making to them is really about confidence and self-belief, about someone actually listening to what they want, to hearing stories of that broken rung and the realities of it, and enabling young women to see within themselves the talent that they have and the resourcefulness and resilience that they're using often on survival, and helping them channel that into the thing that they really want in their lives. And we also provide help for young women with their interview, job applications, help to create a really good CV. And we have a lovely community of young women who, you know, what I love about working with young women is when you see a group of young women together, how powerful the peer support is that women give each other. It's really electrifying to be in rooms, I think, with young women who very quickly reach out to each other, are vulnerable with each other, say what things are really like for them, offer each other tips. We have a fantastic online community of young women who are cheerleading each other and giving to each other what sometimes the sort of sexist system that we're in that is not providing for them that sense of what their real value is. So yeah, I mean, that's a lovely part of what we do, along with the research that we do with young women. This, the report we're talking about today, is an example of that. And also campaigning with young women for changes in the workplace, because we know it's not just about providing support for the here and now, helping young women deal with the difficult situation they're in. We actually, you know, we need to shift the dial and campaign for change and highlight that there's this income gap that is still largely invisible, that many young women don't know about themselves, and that you can't change a problem that you're not talking about, that you don't know exists. So we're really wanting to get this income gap on the agenda for employers, for politicians, and the minds of the public, and thinking about really starting to tackle it right at the beginning of young women's lives.
Mm. I mean, there's so much in what you said. I mean, first of all of the, you will share with me, you know, how anyone listening can get access to the resources and amazing support that Young Women's Trust offers. So I'll add that to the show notes right at the end of the conversation. But I mean, there are a couple of things that immediately leapt out as you were speaking. I mean, one of them was around access to benefits and financial support. And the other one was about, you know, the commitment that the UK government has made over successive governments to pensioners and making sure that people right at the end of their working career have the right support that they need to maintain a certain quality of life and standard. And of course, you know, once you're past your peak earning point in your life, and, you know, if your pension isn't, your private pension isn't adequate, then you want to have recourse to the state pension. And for those people that have worked, you know, 40 years, that is, it's right that they should have, you know, a comfortable retirement. But, you know, when you think about the triple lock, which for those people that are unfamiliar, you know, in the UK, the triple lock basically means that anybody that is receiving a state pension by virtue of having made a certain number of national insurance contributions over the course of their working lives, that state pension will increase each year by the higher of inflation, average wage increases, and 2.5%. And of course, we know that we're in a hyperinflationary environment right now, the highest level of inflation for 40 years. So for example, in the last year, that would have meant that the state pension in the UK would have increased by somewhere in the region of 8 to 10%. I can't imagine that universal credit and any benefits that young people are receiving, and young women in particular, are anywhere near that level. And so what happens is that in real terms, the value of their money, their purchasing power, has dwindled over time. So when we're talking about some of those other things that, as you rightly say, Claire, you know, it's not even about thinking gender pay gap, gender pensions gap. They're not even in a position to think about those things, because by virtue of the broken rung and then everything that goes before they even put their foot on the broken rung, they're already at a disadvantage. And that when they seek recourse to government agencies to get additional support, they're finding that they're not given the same care and attention as those people who are at the end of their working lives. So that's the first thing that leapt out at me. And I suppose interrelated with that is, you know, when we see these kind of viral trends on TikTok and elsewhere, I mean, I'm obsessed with girl math because I think it's horrific, but this hashtag girl math, anybody listening, just put hashtag girl math in and see what comes up. And I mean, it's awful. What we need is hashtag Operation Girl Vote or Operation Female Vote, in recognition of the fact that as long as governments continue to ignore this issue and continue to treat young women so poorly in terms of their policy making and decisions, what it does is to engender this level of complete disengagement and disillusionment with the political process. And of course, with an impending general election in the UK, you would think that this generation of young people that you would hope to engage early enough would be, could potentially be a powerful game changer in terms of the direction of the country. So for anybody listening that has any kinds of sway in government or in parliament, I think it's important that they start to take notice. And this is not just about having, you know, the glossy steering groups or working groups and inviting people to number 10 and then people posting their lovely pictures of themselves in front of number 10. That's wonderful. I've done one of those pictures too. But this is about saying what happens behind the door of number 10. So when I've gone home, having taken my picture and posted it on Instagram, what are you doing? What did you do with the findings of that steering group once the press release has been issued? Which brings me on to my next question, Claire, before we start to talk about your personal relationship with money, which is, what kinds of interventions would you like to see from the government or other policymakers to tackle this inequality? I mean, of course, you've talked about some of the campaigning work that Young Women's Trust does every day to amplify this issue. What would you like to see government doing differently?
Absolutely. Well, I love your get out to vote inspiration there, because I think it is really, really, really important. Operation Girl Vote. We absolutely need that. That's so key. And we know that the government could do some immediate things in the cost of living crisis that would make a huge difference to young women in poverty. We mentioned a couple of those: increasing universal credit, so that it covers life's essentials. We think national living wage should be available to everyone from the age of 18. That would just make a big difference right away. But in terms of narrowing the gap between young men and young women, things that we want from government, like affordable childcare right at the top, flexible childcare, because young women are working shifts. They're not finishing their work. They're not working 9 to 5. Many are working at weekends and evening times. We know that flexible working is really key for young women. And we know that young women are more likely than young men to be in precarious work, to not have notice of shifts, to not have an employment contract, to not have paid holiday. So it's also about looking at precarity and legislating to make sure that exploitative zero-hour contracts are no longer legal, giving employers a requirement to give workers more notice of their shifts, particularly if you're a carer. You can't go to work when an employer's told you 24 hours notice you've got some work or your work's been cancelled. You know, life doesn't work like that. We know also, though, that there are things for employers to do. And there are some green shoots here, because really good employers are doing things that are really shift this income gap. Things like, for example, they put a salary on an advert. When you put the salary on an advert, you're being transparent about what that job pays. You're cutting out what can really happen, which is where men negotiate higher salaries with male bosses. And you also don't ask questions about salary history, because when an employer sets a salary by asking someone, what were you paid in your last job? You carry on that gender pay gap into women's new jobs. So good employers are, and in some, interestingly, in the States, some US states have actually legislated to require salaries on adverts. That might be something that the EU is going to do soon too. So things about salary transparency. When young women get into the workplace, are you offering flexibility? Are you putting flexibility, the flexible working options on the advert? Are you making them available straight away? And are you paying fairly once young women are in your organisation? Really good companies. I was hearing some the other day that have an early careers offer, and they set themselves targets about the promotion of young women and young women apprentices in quite male dominated industries, like some of the water companies are quite interesting in this, of supporting their young women apprentices in particular. So like, let's really call out those companies who have got bad practice, but also celebrate those employers who are changing things, because they're the way of the future, because they're going to recruit and retain the most talented workforce, and they're going to get that big bounce on their business and their bounce on their bottom line. So there's hope there. We need to keep the political pressure up, and we also need to keep the pressure up on employers, because they are ultimately going to be responsible for this, fixing this broken rung and allowing young women to rise up through their organisation and use their talents.
Yes, yeah, so many good thoughts and ideas, and just ways that very practically that employers, governments, policymakers can start to effect change. But yeah, we've got to keep the pressure high on them for sure. So now, just thinking about your own personal relationship with money, given all of the work that you do, talking about income equality all of the time, being exposed to all of these data and statistics, how are you managing your own money? Has your own personal relationship with money evolved over time? Are you a money maven, or are you someone that's made a money mishap or two over the course of your life?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, I was one of four kids and money was quite tight when I was growing up. I mean, we had everything we needed, but I knew that my mum was always doing the maths. So I guess it's made me quite a frugal person. I mean, I was also lucky enough in my 20s to travel and live abroad. I spent some time working in Cameroon in a very rural village, and with a lot of poverty, people living a very different type of lifestyle and with different values, really. And that also informed my perspective on money. Now I'm really lucky to be in a household where I'm earning well and my partner is earning well. And I've got two girls who are 10 and 12. And a bit of focus for me really is, you know, I'm just conscious that they're getting things that I never had as a child, like going out to eat sometimes or going abroad for a holiday, and not wanting them to feel guilty about that, but wanting them to be aware of the privilege that they have, and to, when I say count their blessing, you know, count your blessings. That's something that I was brought up to, like, just appreciate what you have. So, and not take things for granted, I guess, because as we've talked about today, not worrying about money, not having a daily worry about money, is a huge privilege, because that's so not where so many people are right now.
I mean, I, in common with you, have two daughters, and given the work that I do, I think people assume that I'm just constantly going around with like a clipboard trying to talk to them about, you know, these are 10 lessons that you need to know about money, and like ramming the points of cash is queen down their throat. When in reality, of course, we know that children are picking up by osmosis things about money from us. And sometimes I catch myself saying certain things to them, and then I have to be like, ugh. Because exactly as you describe, I want to strike that balance too, between helping them to recognize their privilege, but also to normalize luxury in their life. You know, I don't want them to ever feel that certain things are beyond their grasp, or not for people like us, or, you know, any of those sorts of things. But, you know, there is this constant tension, isn't there, as a parent, where you're trying to make sure that they don't grow up to become spoiled brats, but at the same time, have an appreciation for the importance of building financial security and having those solid financial foundations and the work that goes into that. So that's really key. And I suppose, given your experiences and, you know, including, you know, your time spent in Cameroon, which I'm sure must have been really transformative for you in terms of your worldview when you came back to the UK, what does it mean to be a wealthy woman to you, with everything that we know about the different ways that wealth can manifest itself, you know, spiritual wealth, emotional wealth, all of these different things, recognizing that, of course, financial wealth is kind of an anchor for all those other things. We can't have the privilege to be like, you know, I'm meditating for 10 minutes a day, if while you're meditating, all the debts keep floating up in your brain. What does it look like for you?
Well, absolutely, isn't it? I think wealthiness really is, as we're saying, not being consumed by money worries, because what that frees up in your mind, in your emotional health, isn't it, is huge. And for me, the really tangible things about having a secure home, which is enormous privilege for young people today. I feel like I know I'm going to come back and my home is going to be there for me. Although my mortgage is escalating, you know, it's not like, you know, I'm not running around having to queue through the night to get a rental. That sort of, that the rental market for young people is so dysfunctional, a rental market for everybody, but young people are finding it particularly difficult to get secure housing. And I think, so being wealthy for me is, yeah, having those choices. I think the other thing is, you know, very speaking for me personally, my mum died when she was 59 and very young. And that was pivotal for me about understanding how much of that wider idea of wealth that you talk about in your podcast, Davinia, about health and well-being, about what it is to be a good, have a good life, just made me think much more about health. And knowing that part of a good life for me, that the wealthiness in a broader understanding of that word, is about the people that I care about being well. And I'm not particularly good at looking after my own health, but knowing that that's a big part of what I value as I get older. And another thing, never to go take for granted, you know, to celebrate your well-being. Life is short, and therefore, you know, it gives you that sense of like, what am I wanting to do with it? What changes do I want to make? What fun do I want to have? What people do I want to love? All those questions.
I love that. Celebrate your well-being. That's nice. Definitely. So Claire, when we talk about investing at Raincheck, I always say to all of the Rainmakers, we are our biggest investment by far as individuals. What would you say has been your biggest investment in yourself, and how has it transformed you?
Oh, that is a good question. Oh, I would say that probably the biggest investment I've trying to make, particularly recently, is to maybe like take a bet on yourself, to take a risk, to get out of your comfort zone, which is maybe a strange definition of investment, but I think it is, because either it's an investment in your self-belief, or sometimes when I'm lacking that self-belief, it's just having to hold the anxiety about, am I good enough? And just doing it anyway, and investing in that way. And that's definitely been true as a new chief exec. I started in this job last year. I've not been a chief exec before. It was like a big leap of faith. It was pushing myself out of my comfort zone. It was frightening. But I think that the other side of times in my working life when I have taken risks and other times I've really needed to stay in my comfort zone, you know, with young children or like other things going on in my life, unstable relationships, whatever it was, you can't always take risks in life. But when you can, they do generally really reward you. And now the other side of that, taking a leap of faith and becoming a chief exec means I'm leading an organisation like Young Women's Trust, which is full of brilliant colleagues and inspiring young women. And we're trying to tackle an issue that I feel so passionate about. And it leads me to feel very full of purpose. And it's tough at times, but that was a kind of investment, I think, if I'm allowed to Absolutely. Answer the question in that way, you know.
I love a lateral response. Yeah, no, it's brilliant. I love the idea because, and particularly for anyone listening that has that fear of doing something new or taking that leap, I hope that perhaps, you know, they know what they need to do. And then having listened to you say this and also reveal that actually, you know, it was a scary leap for you to make that leap. And you did it, and how the sense of pride that you have in yourself, how your confidence expands as a result of doing that. And sometimes you need to push yourself maybe before you feel ready, because actually as women, quite often we are ready, but we just need someone to shove us off the cliff and then the parachute opens up. So yeah, that's a brilliant response to that question, Claire. Thank you so much. So three quick fire questions before we wrap up. So first thing that springs to mind, what's one money lesson you learned early on that you swear by?
Oh, maybe this is a bit lateral, but I think be generous with your money. And whenever you can be, you know, certainly times in life that I haven't, you know, I haven't got any spare cash, but whenever I have, I think being generous with money for me is a kind of generosity of spirit. It is a part of my values. I think I've got I'm one of four kids, and one of the things that's really nice, obviously we've had our moments and we, you know, ups and downs in our relationships, but really support each other through financial ups and downs as well, relationship breakups or a big bill coming in, a ceiling falling in, a car breaking down, you know. So I think that. There's that, what goes around comes around, and you don't go to the grave with any of this money. So if you do have a little bit extra... Yeah, I don't have any really savvy investing tips or how to save money.
No,
I think it's a good one. Yeah, yeah, give a little bit of money when you can.
And one that we haven't had before as well. Yeah, what you're doing is effectively planting the seeds of good financial karma, which I love.
exactly.
So, okay, my next question. If money is no object, what are you blowing the budget on?
Oh, well, I hate grey Februarys. I'd go somewhere hot every February, ideally on like a magic carpet, so I didn't have any kind of guilt about air miles. And I'd go somewhere hot. But I don't know, I'd own that. My kids would have to be imaginably frozen in time, and I'd just go away for the whole of February. That would be my big
I love that. And then you come back in the spring. Beautiful.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. I can manage March, but oh my God, not February.
Yeah, I know. At least it's shortish.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so final question then. The book, podcast or discovery that changed my life is... Have you got any book recommendations for us?
I find that really hard question because I don't think there's just one.
Okay.
I think a discovery that changed my life in truth, I think really what changes my life is people and relationships. So I think the discovery that really changed my life quite late, because I was a late developer in my 30s, was that I could commit to somebody. So I discovered in my late 30s that I could settle down, and that was quite frightening, but I did it, and that's, you know, I have my children, and
that's a big life changer.
That was my big discovery, bigger than any podcast or book I've read.
Claire, thank you so much for your time today. Where can people find you and find out more about the brilliant work that you were spearheading at Young Women's Trust?
Oh, thanks so much, Davinia. Well, you can look us up on youngwomenstrust.org, our website, and that's where young women can let us know if they'd like support, if they want to join us as campaigners, as a peer researchers, as media volunteers. You want to be part of what we do. If you want to fund our work, if you want to get involved in any way, check us out. We're also on Facebook, LinkedIn, Insta, and Twitter or X. I can't call it that. If anyone's on X anymore, we're at YW Trust. I don't think anyone is.
Brilliant, Claire. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Lovely. Pleasure to speak to you.
Hi everyone, Davinia here. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If any of what you heard resonated and you'd like to find out more about how RainCheck is helping women all over the world build sustainable long-term wealth, then visit our website at raincheck.com and join the mailing list for more commentary, tips and opinion on how you can start taking steps to leveling up your financial well-being today. You can follow us on social media at RainCheck, and don't forget to share, like, rate, review and subscribe. See you next time.